do my sermons out of what we call the English Standard Version. It's a more recent translation from the original Greek, or at least the newest Greek manuscripts that we have. And so I usually do it out of the English Standard Version, which is a version I would really encourage you. I think it's solid. I think it's really good. The New American Standard is maybe the most accurate. It's a little stiff, though, sometimes a little wooden, a little hard to get into. The ESV, I think, is a very good translation. But we're going to go over to the J.B. Phillips. And here's what it said in verse 15. He said, live life then. We'll come back to the then, because then refers to something before. But he says, live life then with a due sense of responsibility. I don't know why exactly on vacation, but I was really sensing that. You know, to live life with a sense of responsibility. I think we live in a little bit of a crazy day and age. I don't know if you've ever felt that in the last couple of years. I think we all have. But to say, okay, what's right? What's wrong? Where is it going? What am I doing? How am I living? I'm taking up room on planet Earth. What am I doing with it? And maybe vacation allows you to step back and to think about that a little bit more than normal. Because sometimes when you're in the busyness of life, you just kind of get going. But on vacation, I thought, wow, I need to live life with a due sense of responsibility. Yeah, that made sense to me. And then it went on and it says, not as men who do not know the meaning and purpose of life, but as those who do. It goes on in verse 16. In the Greek, it's actually one sentence. It says, make the best use of your time despite all the difficulties of these days. And I think we could all relate to that, to the difficulties of our day. You know, with the pandemic, with the social unrest, with the political chaos in which we live in interesting days. I think these are days in which God is doing something. I don't know exactly what, but he is at work. I think he is doing a bit of refining, a bit of sifting in our world. I think he's doing that in the church. I have a good friend named Mike Andrus, who I was interacting with online. And Mike said, and I think he's right, that at the end of this whole process, whatever this process is, of the pandemic and all the other things, that the attrition rate in a church will be somewhere between 25 and 40% attrition. That's pretty significant. That's a huge number. That will make radical changes in many, many churches, including our own, which I think we're facing the reality of an attrition of about 25 to 30% so far. And you think, okay, well, that's kind of hard and sad and difficult and challenging. But in the midst of that, I think we have to say, what is God doing? What is God doing in the church so that it may be needed to be a more usable entity for his truth in the world today? So what is this thing called the meaning and the purpose of life? Now, it's been said that there are three foundational needs of people, right? Three foundational needs of people. The first is this, is to love. The need of the human soul, the human spirit, is to love. It's a fundamental, basic thing, to love people. And not just to say it, but to actually do it, is to love. Secondly is this, is to be loved. Isn't that an incredible, powerful thing when you're actually loved by somebody? Now, we wish it was perfect, that people would love us perfectly. Especially that people would love us the way we want to be loved, right? But just guess what? Every person, in fact, the people you live with, people you're sitting with, none of them are going to love you perfectly, because they're people. They're broken, inadequate people. But to be loved. So the biggest needs in life are to love, to be loved. In fact, the other day we were in our staff meeting, and I drew a circle on the board. It was about this big. And I said, this is Quest. Here's Quest. For all that it is and all that it isn't, for all the people and for all the things, this is Quest, right? It's a circle. I'll go this way. It's a circle. And would we like to see it grow? Well, yeah, we would, because healthy things grow. For sure, we'd like to see it grow. So maybe it'd be this big. Or maybe this big. But it is what it is right now. It's this circle, right? And so I drew a line down the middle of the circle on the left-hand side of the circle. I said, well, let's describe it. Let's use some words to describe who we are. And we tried to put on the most part the positive things. We put some not so great stuff, but we put, you know, a lot of positive things along there. And then I said, okay, on this half of the circle, let's write down what will it take to be that church? What will it take? And so we began to list a few things. But after a little while, our discussion, it seemed as if what we were saying, and so I wrote over here on the board over here in a big arrow to that part of the circle, what it's going to take, I think is what we were saying, is a personal touch. And that's going to be a challenge to this day and age. The personal touch. It's going to have to be real. It's going to have to be personal. It's going to have to be consistent. It's going to have to be connecting. That's why we want you to be a part of a small group, is we want you to be in a place where you're known and you're loved, accepted, understood for all of your quirky stuff, for all of our quirky stuff, right, is to be loved. So that the basic needs of mankind are to love, to be loved, and last, to have meaning and purpose in life. Those three things will keep you going. To love and to be loved and to have meaning and purpose in life. So let's go back to Ephesians here. Let's box this again, the meaning and the purpose of life. You ever wondered about that? What is the meaning and purpose of life? I mean, usually we get just kind of going through life and we don't think about it a ton, but periodically you come and you have a little bit of time to think about the meaning and the purpose of life. And here we find Paul telling the Ephesians, live then with a due sense of responsibility, not as those who do not know the meaning and purpose of life, but as those who do know the meaning and purpose of life. Well, what is that? So this week I spent some time, really the last few weeks, you can go to Google. Try it when you go home. Just Google the meaning and purpose of life and see what comes up. Okay? Now, I did that, and I'll tell you a little bit about it here in a minute. I also decided that I wanted to talk with some people. Now, during a pandemic, that's a really weird thing to do, is just go randomly talk to people. So there, this week, I talked to some people at the grocery store. They'd be standing out in front of the grocery store, and I'd say, hey, you got a second? I could ask you a question. Or I was at a restaurant, and I'd ask people that were standing out front, hey, could I ask you a question? No debate, no discussion necessary. I just want to ask you one simple question and see what you have to say. And so I did that with a variety of people this week, and I would just say, hey, what is it? And they could look at me like I was, you know, something weird, but they all had an answer, though they did have to think about it. And then I thought about the meaning and purpose of life, not only from my own experience, but from the scriptures, and say, what is the meaning and purpose of life? So let's walk through a little bit of what I found. If you Google it, you'll find this. One is to live and let live. That's the purpose of life, to live and let live. It doesn't really give you a purpose, does it? It just kind of describes a way of going about it. But really what it says is this, a personal autonomy with a helpful but unguaranteed unity. Isn't that right? We say, hey, I'm going to live, let me live the way I want to live, and I'm going to let you live the way you want to live, and I hope there's not a lot of conflict. I hope they don't have a collision. Let's hope for some unity in this. So I'm going to let you do what you do, I'm going to do what I do, and let's hope that either we can have unity or at least we could run parallel to each other and not have a disaster. Now, you guys, if we look at the last 2 years, I think the evidence would suggest that there's going to be a lot of collisions. There's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of boom, right? So this sort of works, but it doesn't really work. But how about this one? Here's another one you'll find on the internet, is freedom from suffering. That is the meaning and purpose of life, is to not suffer, to avoid the pain that seems endemic in this world, the world around us. Let's not suffer. Well, you can see the weakness of that. We'll talk about it maybe a little bit more in a minute, but there is suffering. And to avoid that means you have to do a lot of things to avoid it, right? Or what about this? I found this kind of surprising on the internet, is survival. Just to survive. To simply defend myself as a placeholder in the world. whether it be physically or emotionally or whatever it might be, is simply to survive. It seems a little fatalistic to me, but it's understandable, right? Especially if you live in a place where survival maybe is less guaranteed than some others. Here's another one you'll find is to obtain pleasure. To obtain pleasure. To have as much fun as possible despite the obstacles. This is party boy and party girl, you know? Just looking forward to the next party, to the next piece of fun. I'm just here to have fun. And when it's not fun anymore, I'm done, right? I'm out of here. My job's not fun anymore. See ya. You know, my family's not fun anymore. I'm out. My marriage isn't fun anymore. I'll find someone else to have fun with. Whatever it might be that we obtain pleasure. It's really, at the end of the day, called hedonism. Just looking for pleasure, right? It's been said that in my generation, the things that we valued in my generation were personal peace and affluence. Probably pretty true. There's some sociologists that would say the new values of a younger generation is personal pleasure and appeasement. I'll appease you so it doesn't interfere with our pleasure. But it doesn't actually work. Here's another one, to be fulfilled. To be fully actualized in my skills and abilities, to be fulfilled, whatever that is, right? We want to be fulfilled, but it's such a slippery slope, right? Well, here's another one. It's probably a little more positive. It's philanthropy, the purpose of life. Philanthropy, to do as much good for as many as I can afford to do that with, right? Or just to function. Purpose of life is to function, right? Without thought, to fit into a functional social pattern. You know, I function. I'll just do it the way it's always been done, and I'll just function, right? I'm going to grow up, and I'm going to get a functional education, and after that, I'll get a functional job. I'm going to get a functional wife and a functional family and a functional house, and I'm just going to, and a functional dog, and I'm going to sit around and function, right? And we'll just kind of function day to day, right? That's the purpose of life, is just to function. Well, here's another one, maybe one that I'd like to suggest fits our lives better, but it's not so easy, it's not so simple as this, to glorify God. That is the meaning and the purpose of life, is to glorify God. Now, let's stop there just for a second. We live in a culture that if you were to say that would feel so foreign to most people. Glorify God. I mean, like, what in the world are you talking about? That's so weird. How do you do that? How would you engage that? How would you, like, that just seems out there. I have a good friend who's a pastor in Germany, and he says Germany today is a place where they have forgotten God. He's not part of the equation. He's not part of their thinking. He isn't part of what they do. And he goes, in fact, we have forgotten so much that we have forgotten that we have forgotten God. And so they live life without him on the radar screen, without him in a picture of things. And so to glorify God would seem so strange. They say, like, what are you talking about? That's so out there. But I would suggest that the scriptures would tell us that our purpose in life is to glorify him, to expose and reveal God's majesty. We've talked a little bit before, but, you know, it's like he's been veiled. It's like there's been a curtain that's been pulled so we don't see him anymore. We don't understand him anymore. We don't get a picture of him anymore. And if you do get a picture, it's like a guy that's out of touch and irrelevant to our day. And if you do get to know him a little bit, he's probably mean. He's probably kind of always upset. He's always something else. I went to a conference once, and the speaker said, "You probably, your picture of God is often the way you picture your father." And at first I thought, oh, don't give me this psychobabble garbage, you know, like, forget it. But the more he spoke, and the more I thought, that was very true for me. I saw my dad. I never questioned whether my dad loved me. I knew he did. It was life-changing for me. But I didn't really know if my dad was interested in me, if that makes sense. In my critical years of maybe a little bit of junior high, but high school, college, my dad kind of drifted from our family. He got busy doing other things. And as a result, I felt like I drifted. I didn't know if he was interested day to day. I knew he loved me, but I didn't know if he was interested. And you know, that's very much the way I saw God. I've never questioned whether he loved me. And not because I was so lovable. I was not that lovable. But I understood that God was an incredibly gracious God who loved me. I just didn't know if he was interested day to day in my life. And so I could kind of live life a little bit separate from him. And it really didn't matter much. That's exactly how I experienced my own dad. Until later in my life when we kind of got back together. But if we see God for who he actually is, if we pull back the curtain, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could have this beautiful picture of him here, a reality of him, and we could just step up here and we could go over and take the curtain, we could pull it back. We could pull it way over here so you go, there he is. And it would just this awesome, beautiful, incredible, majestic God of the universe, the God who created us, the God who sustains us, the God who redeems us, the one who looks at you and you go, and he says, I love that person. That person I adore. Now, I know you know that for every other person in this room except for yourself. You go, he wouldn't think that of me. He would think that of everybody else. I know that. I understand that. I get that. But he wouldn't do it of me. But he would. This God is so incredible that we could pull back and expose him and reveal him. And by this, look at this, by loving him with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and by loving our neighbors as ourselves. It's not rocket science. It's not so difficult. They often came to Jesus and they said, Jesus, hey, which of the commandments is the most important? And there are not only this set of commandments that were clearly taken out of, in the scriptures, but there are a bunch of other laws. In fact, nearly 700 laws that they had, and these are the commandments everybody had to do. And they'd say, hey, Jesus, which is the most important? They were trying to trap him he was going to say, hey, yeah, you know, God's law isn't important. But Jesus would always say that you would love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbors yourself. That's the most important. And so, to glorify God, to reveal who he is, and then by loving him with everything that's in us, and by loving our neighbor. And then people asked, well, Jesus, who's your neighbor? And he told the story of the Good Samaritan. And what he's saying is everyone's your neighbor. Even the people that feel like they're not your neighbor, they're your neighbor. Love them. Sacrifice for them. Every person on planet Earth. Wow. To love your neighbor as if they were you. The golden rule, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's pretty simple stuff. It's how life really works. Is to love that person the way you'd like to be loved. Wow, that's pretty powerful. Well, let's go back then to Ephesians 5. In the J.B. Phillips, it says, live life then. It's a kind of a different way of saying, therefore, what's been said before, you ought to grab onto. And then, with a due sense of responsibility, not as men who do not know the meaning and purpose of life, but as those who do, making the most of your time. Even in the English Standard Version, it says, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise. Then, as a result, well, what's the therefore, right? It's what happened before this? Well, let's look at this. Back up in chapter 4, it starts out by saying this. As God's prisoner, then, I beg you to live lives worthy of your high calling. Accept life with humility and patience, making allowances for each other because you love one another. Making allowances for each other. Allowing them to be human. Allowing them to be imperfect. Sometimes we get a little demanding of each other, don't we? We live in a culture right now that is so full of judgment and hate, and there is very little allowance. Now, let's not allow for sin. Let's call it out. Let's say what's wrong is wrong. But there is such a conflict in our country right now, in our whole culture. There's not much place for making allowances for each other, the unique and quirky people that we are, right? Look at verse 3. Make it your aim to be one in the Spirit. Well, make it your aim to be united in the Spirit of God. We can't do this without God's Spirit. The human race was never intended to do its thing without the Spirit of God being present and building a unity among us. And we have taken that and we have rejected it. And no wonder we find such disunity in humanity. Because we've taken God and we removed Him and His Spirit. It says here, make it your aim to be one in the Spirit, and you will inevitably be at peace with one another. No wonder we don't have peace. Look at this in chapter 4, verse 17. He says, and this is my instruction then, as a result of what's just been said, which I give to you from God, do not live any longer as the Gentiles live. Okay, what's that mean? Verse 18, for they live blindfolded in a world of illusion and cut off from the life of God through ignorance and insensitiveness. We are separated from the life of God. And we try to make it up on our own. Try to fill the vacuum that God is supposed to meet, and we keep trying to fill it with every other thing. And it's through not understanding and being very insensitive. Look at this in verse 19. And they have stifled their consciences and then surrendered them to sensuality, practicing any form of impurity which lust can suggest. Is there any verse more descriptive of our culture than that? We live in a time of incredible chaos, amazing confusion, and much of it around the reality of our sexuality. And we live in a nation that is trying to find the tracks to run on when there are no tracks without God in its presence. This describes it so well. But look in verse 20. But you have learned nothing like that from Christ. He's saying to the Ephesians. Now, you guys, their culture in Ephesus was crazier than the one we live in. I mean, it was absolute chaos. It was nutsoville, right? But we're getting there pretty quickly. But he says to them, you haven't learned that from Christ. Look at verse 5, verse 1. As children copy your fathers, as children copy their fathers, you, as God's children, are to copy Him. And to do that, we're going to have to pull the veil back, right? We're going to have to know who He is. If we're going to copy Him, we have to know who the real God is, what He's really like, and so that we can live like Him, right? And He says here, as children copy their fathers, which we do, and I'm so much like my dad, both good and not so good, to be honest with you, but as God's children, we're to copy Him. Look at this, verse 2. Live your lives in love. And you guys, that sounds so great, doesn't it? Live your life in love. I mean, it's so simple. That's so awesome. That's such a great idea. Every day, in every way, I would just live in love. So why is it so hard? Why is it so easy to get crossways with each other? Because we're such broken people. But live your lives in love, the same sort of love which Christ gives us and which He perfectly expressed when He gave Himself up for us in sacrifice to God. Love like Christ loved. Be willing to die for the other person. Be willing to take it on and be shamed out of love. Wow. That's what Christ did for us. He hung naked on a cross. Can you imagine anything more shameful? I can't. to be called the son of the devil, to be totally rejected, to be betrayed by one of your 12 closest friends, to be betrayed. And the rest all ran away. But he tells us to love like Christ loved. Wow. And that brings us then back to verse 15. Live life then with a due sense of responsibility, not as men who do not know the meaning and purpose of life, but as those who do. Making the best use of your time, despite all the difficulties of our day. Wow. Let's know the meaning and purpose of life. So it goes on from there. Look at that in verse 17 of chapter 5. He says, don't be vague, but firmly grasp what you know to be the will of God. Don't be wishy-washy about this. Don't be vague about it. No, live out, grab onto, be obedient to what you know to be the will of God. Now look at this. It's going to kind of describe it. Don't get your stimulus from wine. For there's always the danger of excessive drinking, but let the Spirit stimulate your soul. Let the Spirit of God fill you. Stimulate who you are. You can't do it without Him. We were designed to be filled with God's Spirit so that we would walk in the garden in incredible fellowship with God. Right? Can you imagine? Remember back in Genesis chapter 2? Adam and Eve, they're hanging out in the garden. Everything is great. And in fact, God would come and walk in the garden with them, and they had this incredible relationship until they decided to do it their own way. And all of a sudden, they said, whoa, oops, I'm naked. I what's going on here? And I'm going to cover up, and I'm going to hide. I'm going to hide from you, Eve. And I'm going to hide from you, God. And I'm going to do it on my own. I don't know what to do. And the longer they went without him, the farther they got away from him, and the more they begin to forget him, and then they forget that they have forgotten him. But he says, don't do that. Let the Spirit stimulate your souls. Now look at this. Here are the results. Express your joy in singing among yourselves, psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. You know what he's saying here? He says, worship together. Worship together. That's what he's talking about here. Love God together. Worship him together. I made you to be together. I made you to be a body. I made you to be connected. And the more isolated you get, the more messed up it happens. We always say in a men's ministry, men in isolation self-destruct, and it's totally true, but it's true for women too. We were never meant to be loners. We were meant to be together. Do that. And then look at this in the next part of 19. Making music in your hearts for the ears of God. I'm glad it says in our hearts because I don't sing very well, but the music in your hearts for the ears of God. How do you do that? Wow. Here's another one. Focus on the Lord. Verse 20. Thank God at all times for everything. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Even the difficult things. And then verse 21. And he says, and fit in with each other because of your common reverence for Christ. We won't go through the passage, but in the next several verses, he's going to talk about fitting in with each other as husbands and wives and figuring that out. Because we have a reverence for Jesus. It talks about parents and their kids fitting in with each other because they have a reverence for Christ. And then it's going to talk about employers and employees fitting together. I mean, that's kind of life, right? Marriage, family, workplace, neighborhood, you know, that's kind of it, right? And he says, hey, figure it out because you revere Christ so much. Wow. So, what do we do with this? So, therefore, what now? What are we going to go with this, right? Here's a thought. Here's maybe the purpose, is to glorify God and to expose and reveal His majesty by loving Him with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, by loving our neighbor as ourselves. Pretty simple stuff. So let me just ask you this. You know, it's not that we don't have to learn to live and let live. I mean, we do, right? I mean, you have to do that. But somehow just live and let live doesn't really cut the meaning and purpose of the depth of life, right? Romans 12, 18 says this, if possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Yes, of course. But you don't give up truth. Real love is both truth and grace put together. But we have to learn how to live with each other, even with people who don't agree with us. But it's more than that, isn't it? And it's not that We should be masochistic and revel in our suffering, be some sort of sadistic, you know, weird, twisted person, like, yeah, I love suffering. No, I don't love suffering. Look at this in 2 Corinthians. If we are afflicted, though, it is for your encouragement and salvation. If we are encouraged, it is for your encouragement, which you experience when you patiently endure the same suffering that we suffer. People go through suffering. Just avoiding suffering is impossible, but it's learning to live suffering patiently, to endure, to hang in there, to work through it. Things do get better. And it's not that we don't have to survive in a broken and challenging world. We do have to survive, at least on one level or another. 2 Corinthians 5. So we are always of good courage. We know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, and we walk by faith, not by sight. Yet we are of good courage, that we would rather be away from the body and home with the Lord. So whether we're at home or away, we make it our aim to please Him. We will make it through. So whether I can go to heaven and be perfect or be here, my goal is to please Him, right? So we survive. It's part of that. And it's not that we shouldn't have times and places of having fun. Though, frankly, you can go to the Scriptures, you don't find a whole lot of description of having fun and laughing. There's some. There's not a ton there. We know that Jesus wept. We don't know that Jesus laughed, though I think if you were with those 12 disciples, you'd have to learn to laugh. If he was with us, he's got to learn to laugh, like, oh, okay, that guy's funny, or that was what he did was funny. I'm sure he laughed. Did he ever tell dad jokes? I don't know. Probably. Was he ever punny? I'll bet he was, but I don't know that for sure. Was he 100% human? Yes, he was. What, he's 100% God? Yes, he was. Did he ever tell a dirty joke? I doubt it, because he knew that silly, coarse jesting was kind of stupid. Did he ever laugh? If you watch The Chosen, it shows Jesus in much of his humanity, and he laughed often, and I think he probably did. But there is something more important than laughing and fun. There's something about called joy. Look at this in Psalm 16. And you, God, make known to me the path of life, and in your presence there is fullness of joy, better than be having fun and laughing. At your right hand are pleasures forever. Wow. It's more meaningful. And it's not that we don't want to realize our potential and exercising our skills and abilities. That's part of life too, right? Of course it is. Look in Ezekiel. He's describing what God wants to do, and he says, I'm going to give you a new heart and a new spirit to put within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit in you. You know, the fullness of who we are is not met in just exercising our skills and abilities, but an exercising love. Isn't that really the ultimate? The whether I'm doing something I'm good at or bad at, would I do it with a heart of love? I think that's what he's talking about here. And it's not wrong to want to do good things, right? In fact, he made us to do good things. But just doing good things by themselves maybe isn't it. But look at Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, one of my favorite passages. For by grace you have been saved through faith. And it's not of your own doing. It's a gift of God, not as a result of works, that no one may boast. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. You know, God prepared you for the life you're living, for the good that you'll do. He made you for this. It's not the way you get to God. It's a response to God. And it's not that we don't have to persevere and function. We do have to function, right? Effectively, even in the ups and downs of life, even in the flat spots of life, we have to function. And just so you know, most of life are the flat spots. The highs and lows, they're less seldom. Sometimes they feel like they come in groups. But most of life's a flat spot. And you have to learn to live in the flat spots of life. Look at this in James 1. It says, but the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, the law of freedom, not the law of Moses, which condemns you, but the law of freedom, which sets you free, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. In the flat spots of life, in the difficult times of life, right? But you guys, somehow, these seem to fall short Every one of these falls short on an earthly level, on a human level. Even the group of them falls short. They don't really capture the human heart, nor the heart of God. But I think if we're really going to have the meaning and purpose of life, then becomes to love and to be loved. That is the meaning and purpose of life, to love and be loved. That's what Jesus said. And so to glorify God is to expose and reveal His majesty by loving Him with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and by loving my neighbors, myself. Wow. So let me just ask you this. What are the things that the world has offered you as a meaning and purpose of life that actually is inadequate for the human soul? What do you get sucked in, tempted by, and you forget to glorify God by loving Him and loving your neighbor? What do you get taken by? And where can you step away from and say, you know what, God, I just want to love you. I want to honor you and glorify you, and I want to love people. And God, I'm not going to do it perfectly. I'm going to do it pretty inadequately. But I'm going to give my life to it. Because the meaning and the purpose of life is to glorify you, to reveal who you are, by loving you with everything that I am, by loving my neighbor, even the ones I live with, really well. I think that's what He's calling us to. That's what captured me on my vacation, and I've been wrestling with this. I hope it's helpful for you. Let's pray. Father, I feel so human. And when I begin to understand that You are a God of the whole universe, I feel pretty small, profoundly inadequate. And so as a result, sometimes I push You aside and I make myself the center of the universe. I'm so important. It's actually not true, except when You come back and You become the center of the universe, You look at me with great value. You made me. You made every person in this room. It was Your idea. You knew everything about every person in this room before birth even happened. Every hair on their head, every element of who they are. And You loved us. For You loved us so much that You gave Your Son. Your heart is for us. You don't abandon Your holiness, but You enter into Your incredible grace and You reach out. And we make life so complicated and we mess it up so many times by grabbing onto other meaning and other purposes other than You. Father, we need a radical presence of who You are to touch us and change us. Father, what I pray for me, myself, and for my friends here is that we would be obedient and surrender to You. We'd stop doing our own thing and we would do Your thing. And Father, You said there is fullness of life in that. There's more life there than what I chose for myself. And so what a fool I am when I walk away from You, when I ignore You, when I forget You, when I forget that I've forgotten You. How crazy am I? But Father, I pray that You would bring us alive, individually and corporately, as a church. Would You bring us alive? May we live with great love for You and for each other. Father, give us a love too for this community, for the people who live around us. Father, may there be a compassion in our hearts like Jesus had a compassion for His friends, for the people that He touched. We really need You. Father, we're really grateful for who you are and your love for us. And you have become our living hope. Everything else is death, but you are a living hope. And so we draw ourselves together this morning to worship you.